Adulting is hard. That's true. A few years ago, I had an opportunity to go to a leadership conference, and that's a generous phrase for what it was. It was 40 people who were there for leadership therapy week. It was more of a therapy session than a leadership conference. They called it that because otherwise no one would go. It was hosted by some people you may have heard of, Cloud and Townsend. If you've ever read any books with the word boundaries in it, you've read some of their books. They've written hundreds of them. Boundaries for dogs, boundaries for your living room furniture. I mean, boundaries for everything, right? And these guys are experts at helping you figure out some things in your heart. And they're kind of therapists and counselors. They're just fantastic people. And so it's called the Ultimate Leadership Workshop. I got to go and explore a lot of things around feelings for a week. It was a lot of fun. I thought I had two feelings, hungry, angry. And I found out there's more than that. And so it was a great week, to say the least. It was a hard week, but it was a really fun, kind of interesting, introspective week. And the thing that really kind of turned me on to the conference that was kind of in disguise as a leadership therapy thing was the tagline for the conference. Here, the tagline was helping you discover what's holding you back. And I just love that tagline because if there's something that's holding me back, I want to know about it. I want to be able to kind of make progress. And as much as I love this tagline, I equally hate this tagline because if there's something holding you back, then it's going to be hard to uncover it. And when you do uncover it, you're going to have to do something with it. So some of you have been through this before, right? Like you went to a counselor and they said, hey, tell me about your childhood. And they started digging around in your heart. And then you found some things like squiggly and crawling around. You're like, nope, let's cover that junk back up and let's just keep going, right? Well, we were there for a week. There wasn't a lot of covering it back up. And we were there to kind of help discover what was holding us back. The thing I love about that too is it kind of feels like adulting, doesn't it? Like adulting is hard because oftentimes life is just holding us back. Some of you would say that adulting is kind of like looking both ways before crossing the street and then getting hit by an airplane. Or maybe some of you would say like being an adult, that's kind of easy. It's kind of like riding a bike, except the bike is on fire and everything is on fire and you're in hell, right? We don't talk about hell much around here, but here you go. So feel good. But adulting really is hard, right? And the reason it's hard is because there are things that are holding us back. Now, the internet kind of invented this term adulting. We made it a verb, and adulting means doing any things that adults do, and we kind of like to make fun of it, you know, when we say it's hard to be an adult, and it is hard to be an adult, but we typically blame things that really aren't terribly hard. I mean, we say adulting is hard because you got to have a steady job, or you got to pay your taxes, or figure out all the loopholes so you don't pay all your taxes, or you got to pay bills on time. That's adulting. You got to have a budget at some point. Adults do that. Like adults cook things that are edible. That's an adult thing. You got to be on time for work. You got to be on time to pick your kids up. You got to get the oil changed in your car and they rotate tires at some point somehow. I don't even know, but the adults do those things. Like adults take showers and brush their teeth and like the real overachievers floss like monthly. Like adulting involves a lot of stuff, and adulting can be hard, but come on, we can figure out most of that stuff, right? Like we can figure out most of the things that we tease around adulting being hard. I mean, we can figure out when to change the oil. I mean, there's a little sticker on your car, and if you wait 2,000 or 3,000 miles afterwards, then you go. It's fine. Like, that's how you change your oil. Like, if you're not sure about paying your taxes, it's totally cool. There's an entire organization that will remind you when you don't. They will even come to your house and visit you if you don't. So when it comes to adulting, like we can kind of figure it out for the most part, but there's still something that feels like it's holding us back. And what that thing is isn't budgets and cooking and kids and all that. It's actually something way deeper, something way more under the surface that's really kind of holding us back. In fact, it's what lies beneath the surface of our adult hearts that really keep us from adulting well. It's the stuff deeper in our hearts that keep us from really making progress. And so for the next several weeks, we're going to talk about those things. We're going to talk about those deeper things in our hearts that really do hold us back, that really keep us from adulting well. So if we kind of go back to my leadership therapy thing I got to do, we spent the majority of our time, believe it or not in a large group thing like a conference. We spent the majority of our time in a room with a small group of us and a therapist. And it always started the same way. Like, we would walk into the room and we'd all sit down in a circle and the therapist would look at us and she would say, hey, or he, you know, they would say, hey, so does anybody have something they would like to share? And then we would all just look at the ground because, you know, maybe you've been in a Sunday school or a small group and, you know, at the end somebody goes, hey, would anybody like to pray? And everybody looks down immediately, you know? Because if you make eye contact, that's like a nonverbal please pick me signal. And so the therapist would say, hey, would anybody like to share to get us started? And we would all go, like, somebody say something, you know? So Wednesday morning, I walk into this thing and we sit down in my group of eight. And there's this lady, therapist, and she says the same old thing we've been saying for the first couple of days. Hey, would anybody like to share something to kind of get us going? And we all looked at the ground. That was kind of our habit. And after a few seconds, it felt like an hour. It was probably 20 seconds or so. I finally said, okay, I've got something to share. So I just kind of started talking. And after a few minutes of talking, she stops me and she says, hey, Gavin, hold on real quick. She goes, do you mind if I ask you to do something? Now, internally, I was like, no, absolutely mind. Do not ask me to do anything. This is already super weird for me. So just please don't talk to me and let me go home. And so she says, do you mind if I ask you to do something? Now, I decided before I got there, I was like, okay, I'm going to be all in on this. Whatever they ask me to do, I'm going to say yes. I'm going to participate fully with feelings. I'm going to do all that stuff. And so she says, can I ask you to do something? And I remembered, oh yeah, I said I was going to do this. And I said, okay, sure. Well, what do you want me to do? She says, can you come and stand in the middle of the circle for a minute? So I got out of my chair and I went and stood in the middle of the circle. And then she says, would it be okay if everybody else stood up around you and kind of put their hand on your shoulder? I said, well, thank you for asking my consent. That's very sweet of you. But I guess so, because yes, I have to say yes. And I'm a pastor. I'm like, I know where this is going. Like, I just shared something and she's like, I can't believe you said that. We're going to pray for you and we're going to put our hands on you. And there may be oil involved later. We're going to anoint you and hope you get your junk together. So we're all going to stand up and put our hands on you. So I'm like, sure, come on. So everybody comes and stands around me and they put their hands on me. Now here, this is awesome. The therapist looks at me and she goes, okay, Gavin. She says, all of these hands represent who you are. All of these hands represent who you are. I want you to take one of these hands off of you. And as you take it off, I want you to name one thing that you are. And I thought, well, this is way worse than praying for me. Okay. In fact, I think I said, can we just pray for me or something? Like, that'd be way easier. Because I'm like, I've got three things and there's 12 hands or something. Like, I don't know. So I start labeling. Like, I'm like, well, I mean, husband, father. I'm thinking there's two hands. I got eight to go. Pastor. I'm one of those two. Pastor, right? Tennis player, athlete, I use that term very loosely. And then all of a sudden I started thinking, there's a lot more hands to go. Now, I'll tell you more about this in a second, but I want to do this for a minute, and everybody in the room. If you're watching online, you're at a coffee shop, you just participate too. Nobody else will know what you're doing. Super weird, but awesome. So here's what I want you to do. I don't want you to touch anybody, unless you want to date them, and maybe that's the way to go. I don't know, but keep your hands to yourself. But here's what I do want you to do. We're going to do this for a couple of minutes. I want you to turn around, find somebody you don't know, if you're comfortable with that. If you're not, that's okay. Just talk to somebody you came with. Introduce yourself, and then don't do 14 things. Just say three things, two things, like a couple of things that would describe who are you? Who are you? Can we do that? So who are you? So a couple of minutes, turn around, introduce yourself, tell people one, two, three things that describe who you are. Sound good? All right, go. All right, you guys ready? All right, stop talking in church. Here we go. All right. Okay, that was fun. Did you meet somebody new? All right. Now, I had a lot more things I had to name, right? But I don't want to just write all mine up here. So, I mean, I said I'm a few of these things, but what about you? Like, what are some of the things that you just said as you introduced kind of who you are? Anybody want to yell anything out? Mom, I heard somebody say mom. Okay. Mom, and I'm going to put of the grand variety. Okay. What else? Whoa, one at a time. What? Teacher. That's a good one. We love teachers, man. Gosh. Teacher. Okay, hold up. Teacher. I heard student. I got one more I heard too. Bulldog. Okay. Is that how you spell it? All right. It's actually not. So if you went there, you didn't know that, but that's not correct. I don't have time for this right now, but I you know this, right? I grew up a Georgia Tech fan because when you're little and you're born into it, don't cheer. Don't cheer. So yeah, exactly. They just got beat by, I don't even know if they're a real school. So so when I was 10, I remember telling my dad, I was like, Dad, I got bad news. He's like, what? He goes, did you do something wrong? I said, maybe. He's like, I got a hat with that on it. And he said, do you like Georgia? I went, well, they win. So yeah, so I didn't know better. All right, so we'll leave that up there. Now, here's the thing about that list. That's a great list. It's a really good list. Now, what I love about this list is it looks a lot like the list that I had when I was in that therapy session. Like, I'm starting to name all these things, and those kinds of things were what were coming out. And we could go on forever, and we could name so many different things that we are. But the reality is that what we just proved is that, at least for the most part in our heart, that kind of what we do often defines who we are. Like, what we do kind of defines who we are. And it's been like that since the beginning of your life, right? Like, you weren't that old before the first person said, well, what do you want to be when you grow up? And when you answered that question, you answered with what you wanted to do when you grew up. Like, I want to be a policeman. I want to be a policewoman. I want to be a garbage man, which, by the way, when you're a kid, seems amazing. Like, driving around in the back of a truck all day, so free, it sounds like a great idea. One of my kids wanted to do that. I encouraged him. I said, that sounds like an amazing thing. I'd like to do it too. Like, some of you wanted to be a prince or a princess. You wanted to be an airplane pilot. You wanted to do something like that, but it was all doing, right? What do you want to be? And your answer was, well, this is what I want to do. In fact, let's look at the things that we listed. I mean, we listed all these things that we do, and what we do often begins to define kind of who we are. Now, what we could do, though, is replace that with another word. We don't really use this word to talk about it, but it's really what it is. It's our identity. Like, nobody said to you when you were 2, so what do you want your identity to be when you grow up, right? But that's what they were asking. What do you want to be when you grow up? It's another way of saying, like, what is your identity going to be? And on the surface, our identity being wrapped up in all those things that we are is probably okay. I mean, on the surface. But let me ask you a question. What happens when those things start going awry? Like, what happens when one of those things gets messed up? What happens to our identity? See, there's some problems when things go wrong. For instance, if your identity is a father, but then you lose a child, what happens to your identity? If your identity is husband or wife and you find yourself divorced, what happens to your identity? If your identity is an athlete and you realize that you're getting old, what happens to your identity? Like, when your identity is a teacher and you realize that your students aren't being successful, what does that do to your identity? What does that do to who you are? See, here's the reality. When we begin to define who we are by what we do, it creates an identity, but it's an identity that is incredibly circumstantial, and it's really fearful, and it's unbelievably fragile, because our identity goes as kind of we go. Our identity is only as good as we can be. It's only as successful as we are. If I could go back to that circle, I was standing there and had all these hands on my shoulders, and I start taking them off and I start naming things. And eventually I make my way all the way around the circle. And now everybody is sitting back down on their chairs and I'm still standing in the middle of the room. And the therapist looks at me. She says, okay, Gavin, now that all of that is gone, now that all of that is gone, who are you? Now that you're not a husband, you're not a father anymore, just pretend you're not a pastor anymore. Now that all of that is gone. Who are you? It was a really hard question to answer. In fact, it was a real defining moment in kind of in my adult life. I mean, as I stood there and I thought about the answer, I stood there for a while. I didn't even really know what to say. Because up until that moment, whether I had intended it or not, and whether I even really realized it or not, who I was all wrapped up in what I did. Like what I did had absolutely defined who I was. I mean, my pant size defined part of who I was. My bicep size defined part of who I was. The size of this church defined part of who I was. Every success that I had defined a little bit of who I was. Every accomplishment that I'd had defined a little bit of who I was. But every failure defined a little bit of who I was. Every loss defined a little bit of who I was. I became unbelievably competitive. And the reason is because winning is a better identity than losing. I became really averse to taking risks and trying new things. You know why? Because if you try something new and you fail, failure becomes an identity, and I would rather not try and fail. It's just easier to maintain that identity. You know, like a long time ago, this would happen all the time when I would speak. And people just like you, maybe some of you, would walk up to me and you would say, Gavin, that was so good. And I would say, thank you. And it built my identity. And then sometimes some of you would walk up to me and you would say, you're getting so much better. Honestly, I remember thinking, what kind of comment is that? Like, I don't even know what to do with that. Like, I would go, thank you, you know? And if that was you, I know you didn't mean bad by that. Like, you were trying to be, you know, to be kind, to be compliment me. But because my identity was so wrapped up in what I did, when you would say things like that, I would hear it and I would think, well, how bad was I? Is that in my identity still? Am I still bad, you know? Because when your identity is built on what you do, it's really circumstantial, isn't it? And it's really fragile. Now, if you're not a Jesus follower, if you're not like a Christian, you're not a church person, I don't honestly know what to tell you from here. I mean, I want you to stay tuned in with me and I want you to listen to the solution because there is one. But the solution's going to involve faith, and it's going to involve Jesus. And so if that's not a part of your life right now, I think the best advice I can give you outside of maybe leaning into this truth is to just be really successful and get really nice stuff and be better than everybody else and don't ever fail and don't try new things and don't risk it. Because if you lose, your identity becomes loser. And if you can't accomplish, your identity becomes failure. And if you own a business, you better be great. No. If you're an employee, you better be the best. Because that's what your identity is going to be built on. The good news is that for those of us that are Jesus followers, there's actually a way better alternative. There's this guy named the Apostle Paul. I bet a lot of you have heard of him. Paul wrote like 2/3 of our New Testament. And all of those writings are letters he wrote to churches. And he wrote about this all the time. Now, he didn't really use the word identity when he wrote. He used other words, but what he was saying was this. And the thing I love about Paul is that he built an unbelievable identity based on what he did. And eventually he realized that it was circumstantial and fragile. And there was a way better foundation to build it upon. In one of the letters that he wrote to the churches in the city of Philippi, he actually kind of expanded upon why his foundation of what he did was better than everybody else's. And he should be really confident in his identity because of his successes and because of his accomplishments. He kind of reminded them in the letter. Here's what he said. He said, though I could have confidence in my own effort, if anyone could, my own effort being like my own performance, like the way that I live, like all of my successes. If anybody could have confidence in that, it's me. I'm Paul. He says, indeed, if others have reason for confidence in their own efforts, I have even more cocky Paul, right? He's better than everybody, so he thought. And then he says, here's why I think that. I was circumcised when I was 8 days old. I'm a pure-blooded citizen of Israel, a member of the tribe of Benjamin, a real Hebrew if there ever was one. I was a member of the Pharisees who demanded the strictest obedience to the Jewish law. I was so zealous that I harshly persecuted the church. And as for righteousness, I obeyed the law without fault. Performance. Success. Achieve. And my identity is going to be built in that. That's what Paul would have told you a few years before he interacted with Jesus. Then he says, I once thought that these things were valuable because they were my identity. And that's valuable to me. Like, I once thought those things were really valuable, but now I consider them worthless because of what Jesus Christ has done. Now, what has Jesus done? I'm so glad you asked. Let me tell you. He came to earth. He put on the body of a human, God in a bod. He lived here for 30 or 33-ish years. He died and he rose again. And the reason he did it wasn't just heaven. The reason he did it was to set you free from the things in your old past, to set your identity free, to give you the opportunity to be something way better, way more solid, with a foundation that will never move. That's why he did it. And Paul knew that. And Paul lived out of all this old stuff for a while until he realized who Jesus was and what he really did. And he dedicated his entire life to helping everybody else learn that too. That's why in every single letter that he wrote, he talks about this idea of being free through faith. That's a way of talking about identity. You can read in almost every single letter he wrote, he talked about that idea. Let me just give you one example. It's in the book of Galatians. He's writing to all the Galatian Christians in the city of Galatia. Here's what he told them. He said, let me put it another way, which is awesome because he says it over and over in all these different ways. He says, let me put it another way. The law was our guardian until Christ came. It protected us until we could be made right with God through faith. He continues, and now that the way of faith has come, we no longer need the law as our guardian. Let me quickly tell you what this means. See, before Jesus, the law was kind of the God that you served. And if you obeyed the law, you were good with God, and everybody wanted to be good with God. And so your identity, think about it this way, your identity was completely wrapped up in your obedience. Your identity was your performance. Your identity was your achievements. If you obeyed the law, then you were good with God, and you had earned an identity that you wanted. And Paul says that way of thinking, that way of living, is how we used to do it. It's the old way, but there's something new that has come, and his name is Jesus. And faith in him changes our identity because you don't need the law to guard it anymore. So Paul, who are you? Who are we, Paul? Who are we? And Paul says, I'll tell you exactly who you are. For you, as Jesus followers, for you, you are all children of God. You're all children of God through faith, not through works. Not through behavior, not through earning it, not through deserving it, through faith in Christ Jesus. What Paul was basically saying is that Jesus has given you the opportunity for a brand new identity, and it's not based on what you do. It's solely based on being a child of God. You know, if you have children, you probably understand this a little bit. Because if you have children, you probably know that there's nothing that your child will ever do to make you love them more or love them less. Now, there are things your children will do that will make you frustrated. There are things your children will do that will make you want to punish them. And you probably should do that. But as far as love goes, as far as acceptance goes, as far as grace goes, they're your child. And you're not even that great of a parent, and you know that. Can you imagine how your Heavenly Father sees you when you're a child of his? And that becomes your identity. See, the beauty of this new identity is it actually comes with some attributes or some values, some characteristics. Paul talks about them a lot. Paul says in every one of his letters that as a Jesus follower, you are free. You are free, meaning that you're not enslaved to anything anymore, including the old way of creating an identity, that you are completely free in Christ as a child of God. He says that you are righteous Righteous is like a real Bible-y word for having a right standing with God. The thing that I think we all would like to have. And Paul says, no, you can have that, but you don't have to earn it. You just have it through faith. It's just given to you through free forgiveness. You have a right standing as a child of God. Or how about this? He says that you are new. Paul says that in Jesus, you are a new creation. The old has gone and the new has come. The new identity has come. The new way of relating to God has come. The new way of having a right standing has come, and it's available to you. Here's one of my favorite ones. He calls you this. He says you are a saint. If you grew up kind of in a Catholic background, when you hear that, you think, okay, now you're going too far, because I know who these people are, and there are statues and basilicas named after them. But did you know that when God sees you, he sees you the same way he sees Peter? He sees you the same way he sees Paul. In fact, if it were up to God, he'd build a basilica in your name too. Because you're as good as they are, and you're as perfect, and you are as loved as they are. That's how God sees you, when you're a child of God. Paul says that you are made whole, that you're not empty anymore, that you are whole. He says that you are loved, that you are absolutely loved. And here's one of my favorite ones. He says that you are treasured. Treasured beyond any measure. Now, when you look at those two lists, I don't know who of us would say, yeah, I don't really want that list. I don't really want to be free. I don't want to be unconditionally loved and accepted. Like, of course that's what we want. And this is what Jesus actually came to provide, this brand new identity. But the reason we don't experience it is because we just keep getting confused about the two. The reason we don't experience it is because we have connected these things together, but we just connected them accidentally in inverse. I mean, look at the list that we created. Who are you? It's all the things that we do. But God would say, no, listen, what you do shouldn't define who you are. What you do should not define who you are. But there is a connection. There is a connection. And here's the connection. What you do should be informed by who you are. But who you are isn't your achievements and your successes. Who you are isn't your failures and your losses. Who you are as a Jesus follower is a child of God. But that identity matters, and it should inform the way that you live. It should inform the things that you do. In fact, if this is who you are, it should absolutely affect the way that you do these things. And it's not taking anything away from being a spouse or being a father or being a pastor or a teacher or a student. It just means that you get to be those things from a completely different place. I mean, think about this for a minute. Can you imagine how your life would look if your identity was free and you got to live as a husband out of that freedom? Can you imagine how everything would look in your life if you lived as a saint, if you lived as whole? But you got to be a mother or a grandmother out of that kind of freedom. Can you imagine if you fully felt loved? I mean, think about this for a minute. This is huge. Can you imagine if you were fully unconditionally loved and you knew that without a shadow of a doubt? There was no gap in your heart where love isn't filling it up. And you got to operate out of that place when it came to being a student, even a Georgia Bulldog fan. Like, think about how powerful that identity is. See, your identity is this thing that sits under you in your life and in your heart, and it drives everything about you. It drives everything that you want to be. It drives everything that you're trying to become. And when you move your identity to a child of God, it frees you from all the achieving. It frees you from striving. It frees you to be free, as what Paul said. It frees you to live and experience eternity right now, not later, but today, heaven on earth. But it comes through your identity. When I think about that moment, when I was standing in that circle in that therapy conference, I remember standing there, and all those hands were on me, and I start taking each hand off one by one, and you know, they're all sitting down, and that therapist looks at me, and she says, "Okay, Gavin, it's all gone. Who are you? Who are you now?" And I remember standing there. And I remember just being really quiet for a minute and thinking. And I knew what the answer was. I mean, the answer is Jesus. That's always the answer, right? Like I knew that was the answer. But I knew I wasn't experiencing that answer. So when she said, "Who are you?" I felt like I had to be really honest. And the honest answer in that moment was, I don't know. Because up until this point, I've accidentally allowed my identity to be all the things that are fragile. I've accidentally allowed successes. I've accidentally allowed failures. I've accidentally allowed all these things to become who I am. And I know that's not who I'm supposed to be, but gosh, it sure feels like that's who I am. I mean, I knew I was supposed to be free, but I didn't feel free. Like, I knew I was supposed to be whole, but I just felt kind of empty. I knew that I was supposed to be willing to take risks, but I was super afraid to, because what happens if the risk doesn't work? I knew that it was okay to not win everything, but I was afraid not to win because you don't want your identity to be a loser. I even knew it was okay to try to communicate a message at church and it not be great, but I never wanted to even come close to that because of what it would mean for who I was. So as I stood there, my only answer was, I don't really know. But I'm really glad I got asked that hard question. Because on the heels of that question, I went back to the hotel that night and I just began to write some stuff. And I'm not really a journaler, like some of you are real good at that. I'm not good at that stuff. But I just started writing some stuff down. And I just felt like God just started like revealing all this stuff in my heart that it just wasn't exactly aligning the way he wanted it to. And I began to think about all the reasons that I thought this way and all the things that had led me to feel this way. And I got to say a prayer to God, and I got to say, hey, God, I just don't want this to ever be me anymore. Like, I don't want to perform for anybody anymore. I don't want to strive anymore. Like, I don't want to try to be better because of my identity. I just want to be me. And I just want to feel fully loved so I can love other people. And I just want to feel fully accepted so that I can be accepting of others. And I just want to be a saint, not one who sins. I just want to be a saint who you think that much of. And I want to feel that. And that was the beginning of something brand new in me. You know what it was? It was the beginning of a new identity. And you know what? Now, when you come up to me after the services, and you can still do this, you come up and you go, gosh, that was really good. I can say thank you, but it doesn't shift my identity at all. I can say thank you because I want it to be good, because the kingdom is worth it. That's why. And when you come up to me and say, wow, you're getting really better at this, I can go, I know, I'm trying really hard. Hopefully we're all getting better at stuff, right? But it doesn't change my identity because that thing is solidified as a child of God. I think that's what God wants for all of us. Not just me, but all of us. So can I ask you that same hard question that they asked me? Who are you? Like, who are you really? Are you the summation of your successes? Are you the accumulation of your accomplishments? Is that who you really are? If you are, it's real fragile, isn't it? You're probably protecting it like crazy. Who are you really? And if you want to move to a better identity, I think this is the question to consider. It's this, like, do you know Jesus or do you just kind of know about Jesus? Because if you know about Jesus, that doesn't change a lot for you. But if you get to really know him, it begins to change your identity. If you get to really know what he thinks of you, it begins to shape what you think of you. And he thinks you're amazing. He thinks you're awesome. He thinks you're worth dying for. His dad bought you at a price because he thinks you're that treasured and that valuable. That'll change your identity. Let me ask you one more question. In your life, how have you connected who you are and what you do? Because there is a connection. But if what you do is defining who you are, you've just got it backwards. But how are you connecting it? If you can figure out how to make child of God who you are that informs what you do, that'll change everything. When your being informs your doing, it changes everything about your doing. And it frees you to experience what God wants you to experience all along. So who are you? Who are you? We're going to end our time today. We don't do this every week, but we're going to sing a song. And here's why I wanted to do this. There's this beautiful song that we just started singing last week. And it says in the song that I am will determine who I am. I am is the word that God used to describe himself to Moses. He says, tell everybody that I am. That's who he is. And the I am can set us free. And the I am can define who you really are. So we're just going to sing the song. And I really would just love for you to think about what that means in your heart and in your life. And in your doing and in your being. And for some of you, you just need to stand up and sing. For some of you, you just need to sit and look at those words. Some of you, you may just need to sit and pray. I don't know what you need to do, but I just want to give you a few minutes to process what this means in your heart and in your life. Because I will tell you this, on the other side of that better identity is everything that you've wanted anyway. And I'd love for you to find your way there.